Coming up on Tech News Today, does Apple's free software mean what we think it means? Also, Microsoft sort of caught faking apps, and Netflix wants to get in the movie-making business. All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today for Wednesday, October 23rd, 2013. Tech News Today is brought to you by Shutterstock.com. With over 28 million high-quality stock photos, illustrations, vectors, and video clips, Shutterstock helps you take your creative projects to the next level. For 25% off your new account, go to Shutterstock.com and use offer code TNT1013. And by GoToMeeting with HD Faces by Citrix, the powerfully simple way to meet online. You can share the same screen and see each other in HD video conferencing. Start hosting a GoToMeeting in seconds from your computer or mobile device by signing up for a free 30-day trial. There's no credit card required to get started. Visit GoToMeeting.com, click on the Try It Free button, and use promo code TNT. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Aya Zachar.
And I'm Jason Howell.
And together, we assemble every day to bring you the best tech news we possibly can, starting with the top 10 stories of the day, the news feeds. Remember the good old days. Remember yesterday when Sarah told you how UK Prime Minister David Cameron was upset at Facebook for allowing a video of a beheading to be posted on its site, and Facebook had changed its stance after a six-month moratorium, saying users should be free to watch and condemn such content, and that, quote, if the video were being celebrated or the actions in it encouraged, their approach would be different. Well, today, Facebook decided to just go ahead and condemn it itself, saying the video appears to improperly and irresponsibly glorify violence. Facebook says its overall policy has not changed since yesterday, but advises users who want to post controversial content to do so responsibly.
BlackBerry Messenger officially launched on Android and iOS yesterday, and the company says it was one of the best single-day openings for a mobile app ever. On iOS, it became the number one free app in more than 75 countries in its first 24 hours, like the U.S., Canada, the U.K., Indonesia, many countries in the Middle East. Over in the Google Play Store, BBM received 60,000 five-star reviews from about 87,000 reviews. So I guess we're saying BlackBerry's back, baby!
Yeah!
Well, maybe they're back. The unannounced LG G Flex made its TV debut in Argentina. The curved phone was demonstrated on air by a reporter. The G Flex has a 6-inch curved screen and has buttons on the back similar to the LG G2. The Verge got its hands on even more pictures of the device and says the G Flex will launch next month in Korea, but no release is planned in the U.S. or Europe. LG still has made no official statement about the LG G Flex.
Be careful calling yourself a hacker, ladies and gentlemen. The U.S. District Court for the State of Idaho has issued an injunction for the seizure of South Fork Security's computers without warning on a request from competing security firm Battelle Energy Alliance. South Fork's chief, Corey Thuin, used to work for Battelle, which accuses Thuin of stealing code. To issue the seizure order, the judge had to be convinced that Thuin was a risk to destroy evidence. Since South Fork's website had the phrase, "We like hacking things and don't want to stop," and two law journal articles cited in the decision state that hackers like to conceal their identities, Battelle argued Thuin was therefore a hacker who must like to conceal things and therefore a risk to destroy the hard drive. And the judge agreed and issued the order.
I'm going to have to think about that one for a second. After recording its first quarterly loss this month, HTC is closing at least one of its four main handset manufacturing lines and reducing its production capacity by at least a fifth. The company's chief marketing officer, Ben Ho, tells Reuters that, quote, when you have less demand, you work with less facilities to optimize your costs. But the company tells The Verge, quote, HTC is not shutting down, nor does it have plans to sell any of its factory assets. A very telling earnings call is scheduled for November 5th.
On a Netflix earnings call, Netflix chief content officer Ted Sarandos says the company is looking to expand into original movies. Netflix will spend less than 10% of its money on original content compared to HBO's 40%. Now, if you're wondering what kind of movies will show up on Netflix first, Sarandos says the company's looking at several documentaries.
Android users can now watch Aereo TV service on their devices if they live in an Aereo region and subscribe to the service, of course. Oh, and they need to run Android 4.2. So let me start over. People in New York City, Boston, Miami, Atlanta, Dallas, Houston, and Salt Lake City who have a device with Android 4.2, you can run Aereo on it now.
A video posted to YouTube shows the DualShock 4 controller is at least somewhat compatible with the PlayStation 3. YouTube user Udetto showed the controller running Urban Trial Freestyle, but it only runs with a wired connection, and Udetto adds that the controller's performance varies depending on the game. The DualShock 4 will be released November 15th in North America and on November 29th in Europe, separately from the PlayStation 4, with a recommended retail price of $59.99.
Ooh, deal. Game publisher Big Fish, purveyor of fine games like Cut the Rope and Bejeweled 3, has partnered up with BlueStacks to enable Android games to be played through the Big Fish Windows and Mac apps. BlueStacks makes a virtual Android environment that can run on OS X and Windows. Android developers who implement the Big Fish API plugin into their titles can make them compatible on the desktop now.
LG just released its first Firefox OS-based phone in Brazil called the FireWeb. Yeah, really, FireWeb. It's a modest phone with a 4-inch screen at a 480 by 320 resolution, powered by 1 gigahertz Qualcomm processor with 4 gigabytes of storage. The LG FireWeb is on sale at Vivo Brazil for about $200 US dollars, or for pay-as-you-go, that's for pay-as-you-go customers. If you're a subscriber, it's only $60.
Let me level with you, folks. We can't do this show for free. We need sponsors. That's why we're very happy to have Shutterstock.com as one of our sponsors. And hopefully you'll be happy with them too. I use them. Shutterstock is the perfect place to find images or video for your creative project. You got a pamphlet you need to make, or a video, or some kind of advertisement. You can get 28 million high quality stock photos, illustrations, vectors, and video clips. And Shutterstock sources images from all over the world. Many of the contributors are professional photographers and artists. They have good quality stuff in there. It looks like the kinds of things you see in professional advertisements, but you don't have to pay huge prices for it. They're adding 20,000 images every day too, so you always got something new. Flexible pricing means you can choose individual image packs or a monthly subscription. If you need it on an ongoing basis, that's the best way to do it, because you can download 25 images a day on that standard subscription. And you can download them in any size, any image. You pay just the one price. Shutterstock gives you the images you need to bring your creative projects to the next level, and they make it easy. Sophisticated search tools. You can search by color, by subject, by file type, by emotion. Shareable light boxes let you share what you're collecting with other people who are working on the same project, so you can all agree on what goes into your final creative uptake. And they have an award-winning iPad app, so you can search on the go as well. They have multilingual customer support, too. Don't take my word for it. Go try Shutterstock today. Sign up for a free account. You don't need to give them a credit card. Just start an account. Begin searching Shutterstock. Help imagine what that project could be like. Save your favorite images to a lightbox to review later or share with friends. Once you decide to purchase, use offer code TNT1013. And new accounts will receive 25% off any package you need. That's Shutterstock.com for 25% off new accounts. Use that offer code TNT1013. We thank Shutterstock for their support of Tech News Today and for all the images that I've used in my book trailers and my websites and all that kind of stuff. All right, joining us today, we're very happy to have Dana Wallman, newly minted managing editor of Engadget. Congratulations on that, Dana.
Thank you.
Good to have you on the show. And we've got a little bit of follow-up to yesterday's Apple announcement to kick us off. A lot of people are talking about the news that Apple has decided to make OS X free and what that means. That's created a lot of controversy out there. It's free as in beer, not free as in speech. You don't get the rights to the source code. But it is free for everybody, even if you got older hardware, even if it won't run very well on that older hardware. As long as it's an official Apple device, you can run OS X on it. iWork still costs you for iMovie and iPhoto until you buy a new Mac. Once you buy a new Mac, then you get iMovie and iPhoto for free. iWork is entirely free, which that seems to be targeting Microsoft. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, Microsoft Office costs you a pretty penny now, $99 a year for the subscription. Dana, what do you think? What effect, if any, does this have? Does this change the landscape at all for software, especially a company like Microsoft?
You know, it's a little bit of a dig at Microsoft, especially like you said on the iWork side. Microsoft has been slow to release a new version of Office for macOS. It already released a new version for Windows, and there's been a lot of hype around that, but it's been sort of slow to port that over to Mac. So this is a little bit Apple getting in while still has a chance. Not that I think it's going to put that big of a dent in sales of Office or anything like that. But even that aside, there's still plenty of benefits for Apple in releasing the OS for free, or at least the OS update. I don't even want to call it a full OS, but at least the update for free.
The OS 10 Mavericks being sort of free, and then like a lot of people were arguing that Microsoft charging, I think, $119 for Windows 8.1, and how crazy that is. It seems a little bit... If Mavericks is really a step forward, it's a gigantic step forward, I think Apple would charge for it. If the idea is to get as many people on board so they can kind of adopt the Mac App Store a lot more, use iTunes Radio, because I know iTunes Radio requires, I want to say, the last operating system. What was the last one called? Whatever big cat it was called. I can't remember right now.
Mountain Lion.
I think that's the one you need to have, because my old Snow Leopard machine won't run it. So to get more access to more of the Apple iCloud stuff, if you're going to do that, you have to have all of these users on board. But I don't really think this is going to be a big deal for operating systems in general. I mean, Linux has been free forever. It's not like it's going to change that much.
I feel like this is less about, you know, getting people to switch over from a Windows machine and hurting Microsoft. I mean, I guess that's probably a little bit of a, that's sort of something that just happens anyway. But I think it's more about, Apple made a big point of this during the conference yesterday, that so many people in the Apple ecosystem upgrade to iOS 7. For example, you know, Mavericks, they just want that to be as easy. You don't have a reason not to. It's completely free. Get everybody on board so there's a unified experience. And I think as the Mac OS and the iOS keep converging, you just want more people to be up to date on everything as you continue to sell expensive hardware.
Sarah's right. And I think that the comparison to Microsoft was a little bit flawed in the first place. Windows 8.1 is actually free for all the people who already own Windows 8 devices. So it's actually kind of similar to what Apple is doing, that it's a not the hugest upgrade, and it's free to people who already owned fairly recent systems. The people who are paying for Windows 8.1 are people who are running Windows 7, which is actually pretty stale at this point, kind of like Snow Leopard. And I agree with everything Sarah said, which is there are plenty of benefits for Apple itself, even besides competing with Microsoft, that you do want developers developing for the most recent platform and not some legacy system.
And maybe Microsoft should do this. The problem is it's a lot easier for Apple to turn on this because they make their money off hardware. That's the way their business mm-hmm. is oriented. And Microsoft doesn't. Microsoft makes their money off of software. I think that there's a very valid comparison of point upgrades like 8.1 and service editions and service packs and all that sort of thing. What I'm wondering is if Microsoft has been positioning itself, which we think they have, to create a subscription model for Windows, how does that sell? If somebody's like, well, wait a minute, my friends who have a Mac, they just get all, it doesn't matter how old their machine is or what operating system they had before, they always get a free upgrade on the operating system. And now Microsoft's telling me I got to pay what, $99 a year or something like that? How does that work?
I don't know how soon we're going to see subscriptions to Windows, the operating system, but we've already seen subscriptions to things like Office, Office 365 being the subscription model. There are pros and cons, of course, to that. I don't think it's flown with everyone. I don't think Microsoft is going to get rid of the regular model altogether where you can just buy the software and have that be it. It is convenient for some people, though, just always having the up-to-date version and not having to worry about how current it is and always being guaranteed the new version.
Yeah, and we're talking about different playgrounds here, too. I mean, Apple would like to be more in the enterprise, but they're not. And Microsoft provides all kinds of support to the enterprise for rolling out updates and things like that as part of that paying subscription. So it's not exactly, I don't want to say apples to apples because, you know, the obvious pun, but it's not exactly a straight comparison in the way that they do things, much less market share. Microsoft also providing some free software that's got them in a tiny bit of hot water, I guess.
Yeah, a little bit of a problem. So this week, Microsoft was repackaging mobile websites and placed them in the Windows Phone Store. Microsoft is calling them Microsoft Web Apps, and they were downloadable from the Windows Phone Store. So one of these web apps that Microsoft made was a Southwest Airlines application. Now, Southwest told NeoWin that, quote, "We have been in communication with Microsoft, but have not given them approval to push our content." End quote. Microsoft then removed the app from the store. There was an app for Cars.com. That's now gone. There was an app for Atari Arcade. That's also gone. The reasons for that, not known right now. It does look like Microsoft didn't make the content owners aware that it was making their web app, making their websites into applications. Dana, why the Microsoft hate here? I mean, why not let Microsoft go ahead, use your website, create an application based on it if they're not developing applications for Windows Phone?
I see two problems with this. One is it's a little bit disingenuous for users to think you're getting an app and then to end up getting a mobile website. They're definitely not the same thing. I know that Microsoft has put a lot of marketing dollars behind Internet Explorer and trying to make rich web apps, but they are not, in fact, the same thing. And I don't think users see them as the same thing. So it's a little bit disingenuous. But also, if you look at the way it's presented in the store, you'll see things like ratings attached to it, star ratings especially. And it must be frustrating to companies to be associated with potentially a not-so-good rating and be associated with these reviews of something they weren't even marketing in the first place as an app. And I can see where companies would want to have full control over the way their content is presented and whether it's presented as an app if it's not.
I think those are really good points, and it illustrates the problem with app stores to me. I mean, honestly, this is not the way the web is supposed to work. If I save a link to a web page, even if it's a little mini browser that re-renders that page in a different way to the desktop of my operating system, that shouldn't be controversial. Right? That's the way the web is supposed to work. The information gets delivered to me. My software packages up and shows it to me, and I choose my browser based on how I like that it packages the information being sent, and the end user is in charge. And this, I think this shines a little bit of a light on one of the disadvantages of moving into this app ecosystem, is that you've given up control as a user to the companies that provide you the app. So, I mean, what Microsoft is doing here would not be controversial on the desktop in 1998. But as Dana points out, it's legitimately controversial for a company who's like, wait a minute, that's not the way people think of apps now. They don't think of them as web pages being represented. They think of them as something we created specifically for them.
Yeah, these web apps.
At the same time, though, I mean, Southwest, Atari, Cars.com, all apparently taking issue with the idea of their services being used, packaged in a slightly different way, you know, coming from Microsoft, is a little telling, isn't it? You know, if you end up, I don't know, buying a plane ticket on Southwest, Southwest wins. I mean, they're how much is it really diminishing the experience?
Yeah, I was looking to see how Microsoft put this together. It would be a violation of Microsoft's own policies if this just launched the web page. Apparently, Mary Jo Foley figured out on ZDNet, she was saying that it looks like these apps are packaged in a way that renders the content within the app, so that way it doesn't violate the policies. So they're not necessarily just showing an HTML5 version of these things. As for Southwest, it just seems strange. If the booking process fails or something, I'm sure they don't want to be associated with an application like that. But the idea of basically having a catalog of bookmarks and then putting them in a little tiled interface and saying, oh, that's a store, versus having a list of bookmarks, would that really be as controversial, like Tom was mentioning? I don't think a list would be a problem if they said, here are mobile apps that work, mobile websites that work very well. No issue there, but call it an app and freak out.
I think you're right. I think you nailed it, Ayaz. What Microsoft did here was try to pretend like these were apps to make their app store look bigger. And if they had said, hey, here are websites in a special browser view that makes them better on the phone, I think they would have more of a defense to places like Southwest saying, hey, we're not trying to pretend like you made this. And Dana pointed that out exactly. What happened is Southwest was like, wait a minute, that's not how we wanted our app to be perceived. Maybe our website looks like that, but you're in control of our interface now, and we're not comfortable with that. Let's talk about Netflix getting comfortable with making original content. It's not just TV shows anymore, huh, Sarah?
Yeah, so Netflix had their quarterly earnings. Things are really looking great for the company. CEO Reed Hastings says he's hopeful the company will land those deals with Comcast and some other cable providers to get more distribution, you know, in the hands of more folks. 31.1 million customers in the U.S. And it sounds like the company is looking at original movies as well. In fact, they say they're looking at several documentaries that would premiere on Netflix. This is coming from Chief Content Officer Ted Sarandos. This was on the company's third quarter earnings call. Although they also said that Netflix is spending on original content, so this includes television shows and or additional movies, next year would be less than 10% of their overall spending globally. About 40% of HBO's spending is on originals, Sarandos says. So he says there's a big gap from where we are to where we could be. Now, they don't release actual numbers, but they did say Orange is the New Black, which is obviously a Netflix original television series, will be its most watched original series ever. They, you know, again, don't have specific viewing metrics. But they also say that the biggest percentage of overall viewing is not from content like this. It's generated from exclusive, complete season after series. For example, they launched old seasons of The New Girl, The Walking Dead, Breaking Bad, Pretty Little Liars. I just started Louie the other night because I was like, I don't know, I need a show. Let's just start from the beginning. They say that's really where the bulk of our business comes from. They also say they're still not interested in sports. Sarandos said on the call, what we bring to the table is a lot of improvement because of the attributes of on demand. I don't think that brings much to sports viewing. So Dana, do you think the future is in original programming with Netflix here? And it's going to take a while for that percentage of those old on demand series to kind of balance out? Or is this just them playing around because they can?
To some extent, I think it's them playing around because they can. I know that just this quarter, just this week when Netflix reported its earnings, I think it said that it now has more subscribers than HBO. And I don't know to what extent you attribute that to its successes in original content specifically, or the fact that it really has nailed these exclusives. And I do think that's where the war is right now, in nailing these exclusives. But in terms of original content, Netflix seems like it can do no wrong right now. And I can see where it would be feeling gutsy and feel emboldened to try new things. The fourth season of Arrested Development was a success. Orange is the New Black has gotten tons of publicity. So as far as original content, I don't know if I would just call it playing around, but Netflix seems to have a golden touch there. And I can see where they would want to push the boundaries and see what other kinds of successes they might have.
Yeah, and when you look at HBO, they spend 40%, I think the Variety story said, of their revenue on originals, where Netflix spends a very small amount. It's like 5%, or 10%, sorry. That I think is telling of the direction Netflix is going is towards HBO. HBO also, I think in 2012 anyway, had about $3 billion in revenue, and here we have Netflix with $1.1 billion. So they're still growing. The fact that they have more subscribers is good for them. They're also available more widely, right? You don't have to have a cable subscription. You have to have an internet connection of some sort. But with phones and everything, it's a lot easier to get Netflix maybe than it is HBO. So all of that to me says Netflix, as they've said, wants to be HBO. What does HBO do? They commission movies. They commissioned a movie that was up for an Oscar last year, or was it up for an Oscar? Or was it up for an Emmy? Now I think it might have just been an Emmy. But they're making theater quality movies with theater quality stars like Matt Damon. So that's Netflix. Like, well, that's the logical next step to go.
I think the move into documentaries also works with Netflix. Is kind of when it comes to Netflix, I think of binge watching. If you have a TV series, you watch as many as you can. Sometimes with Netflix, I know for me, when it comes to documentaries, I end up watching a whole bunch. Like when the ESPN 30 for 30 documentaries showed up on Netflix, I was watching one after the other. If they're going to go into any kind of original movies, it should have that same kind of feel where you go, okay, I'm going to Netflix. I want to learn about this particular thing. Also, documentaries could be a lot longer in form compared to a regular feature film, like a 90-minute film. You could have a 4-hour documentary, and that would be broken up into two parts. Gives it lots of content and no need to negotiate with the content companies because they are the content company. I'm sure Netflix loves that idea.
Let's take a quick break. Thank our other sponsor for today's show. Always happy to have Citrix on board with GoToMeeting. Because you know what? Not all meetings can be planned in advance. Sometimes just stuff comes up. You got a last-minute opportunity. Or maybe a work emergency. Hopefully not, but they do happen. Or maybe somebody just had a great idea. And they're like, hey, everybody, I need to get together and discuss this. And people are like, well, I'm in Minnesota. I'm in Tokyo. I'm in Texas. People are all over the place. It can feel impossible to get everybody together in the same room to have these meetings, especially when you need them to happen now. So be prepared. Sign up for GoToMeeting, the powerfully simple way to meet and collaborate online whenever you need to, wherever you are. With GoToMeeting by Citrix, you can share screens, work together on documents and spreadsheets and projects in real time. All you do is turn on your webcam, turn your meeting into a group HD video conference. It's the next best thing to meeting in person. You're looking at people in the eyes. You see their reactions. You see their faces. You can start or attend a GoToMeeting from any Mac, PC, smartphone, or tablet. We were just using it the other day. GoToMeeting is a great way to be able to tell that people are understanding your ideas and be able to show things and do presentations. Start hosting a GoToMeeting in seconds from your computer or mobile device by signing up for a free 30-day trial. There's no credit card required to get started. Visit GoToMeeting.com, click the Try It Free button, and use the promo code TNT. That's GoToMeeting.com, promo code TNT. And we thank them and Citrix for their support of Tech News Today. All right, let's talk a little bit about this Battelle Energy hacker story we heard about in the news fuse. Battelle Energy Alliance is a contractor for the Idaho National Laboratory. A home story for you, Jason Howell.
It's about time. It's about time.
Hung out at the Idaho National Laboratory. They are suing XINL/Battelle employee. I saw Corey Thuin referred to in the court order as an employee of Battelle, but Battelle is a contractor with INL. He's referred to as an employee of the Idaho National Laboratory. Other places, those lines do get blurred in these situations. But he no longer works for either one of them. He has a company called South Fork Security. He worked on a piece of software called Sophia. Sophia is part of a Department of Energy emphasis to secure the power infrastructure, which we talk about all the time as being a very important thing to do. Battelle wants to license Sophia. When Corey was at the Idaho National Laboratory, he was pushing for it to be made open source. Corey, as I mentioned, he left, started his own company, created a similar product called Visdom, which he intends to open source. Now, Battelle alleges Corey stole code from Sophia before he left their employ and is using it in his program called Visdom. Here's where it gets messy. Who knows? Maybe he did, maybe he didn't. The court has issued a restraining order and allowed the seizure of Corey's computers and the imaging of the drives without notification. Here's why. He wrote on his website, "We like hacking things and we don't want to stop," as a promotion of like, hey, we're the kind of people who just make stuff work, right? The tipping point for the court, according to the court's own issue of the decision, comes from the evidence that defendants, in their own words, are hackers. By labeling themselves in this way, they have essentially announced that they have the necessary computer skills and intent to simultaneously release the code publicly and conceal their role in that act. Battelle had to show in the court case that in order to get the court to sort of go around the Fourth Amendment and issue this order without notification, Battelle had to say, this guy is like the kind of person who would destroy evidence. And the way they showed that was two journal articles that said that hackers use fictitious internet protocol addresses to conceal identities and will, quote, learn new and more effective ways to do so. Most broadly, releasing Sophia open source code has national security implications, writes the judge. As Battelle puts it, defendants plan to give away the keys to Sophia to the very attackers Sophia is meant to thwart. Sort of implying that if you open source code, it's like giving it to the terrorists. Now, I don't know about you. Maybe you weren't aware of this. The U.S. military has an entire open source section at mil-oss.org. So if this judge is right, that's a big problem there. They're just giving away software. I don't think he understands the nuances of open source. I think what's really going on here is the hacker definition problem. Oxford defines the hacker as somebody who messes with things, who does malicious sorts of things. The free dictionary, which is the open source dictionary, defines a hacker as somebody who just likes to play with things, who is proficient in programming. So we've got two competing definitions of hacker here. Dana, this obviously could cause problems if it carried forward as a precedent. Like, if you call yourself a hacker, you're essentially obviating your right to the Fourth Amendment.
This is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard, I have to tell you. It's really a shame that hackers have gotten such a bad name. And there are bad hackers, but to your point, hacking can just as easily mean tinkering with something, being someone who's geeky and enthusiastic about code, which these people might be. And that would definitely be a selling point if you wanted people to hire you to help build software, right? So it's just a shame, too, that that became sort of a shortcut for damning this guy. I mean, for all we know, he really did something wrong. He might be guilty of taking intellectual property from his former employer and bringing it to his new employer. And that would be bad. You know, if I work for AOL, if I went to a competing company like Yahoo and brought trade secrets or company secrets, that would be a problem. But it seems like they use this hacker definition as a shortcut for labeling him and proceeding the way they did. And that just seems not only wrong, but silly, given the definition of the word itself.
Yeah. First of all, he's not using hacker that way on his website. Second of all, using a fictitious internet protocol address to conceal identity is far from the same thing as we'll wipe a hard drive. They're not the same things at all. I'm not sure how the judge leaps from one to the other here.
Yeah, I was reading the order because I wanted to see if it was really a tipping point. It seems like the court didn't want to rely necessarily on the hacker definition, but it does spend a lot of time talking about what the courts in the past have labeled hacker behavior. They did say it was significant the defendants are self-described hackers, but there is this piece about an investigator who was looking into this fellow's computer, saying that Thuin has an unauthorized copy of the code, and there's a high risk he might wipe his computer. It doesn't seem to put a lot of weight on the investigation, because this guy who gave this testimony, he has 23 years experience as an investigator for the government and private entities. I think that potentially this story is getting a little blown out of proportion because of, you know, you see somebody called labeled a hacker, so they're going to get punished for that. It just seems like it's one of a couple of reasons why the court did this. It still seems a bit screwy because of the amount of text written about what a hacker is. Like, it's a really big thing. And the court does say it's significant, but I don't know how damning this is for hackers in general legally.
Well, the court is citing the Reno Air decision and saying that decision says that you have to prove that the person has a history of destroying evidence or is like a person mm-hmm. who has a history of destroying evidence. And they're using the hacker definition to say, oh, he calls himself a hacker, and hackers are people who would destroy evidence, even though the two law journal articles they cite don't really say that. Therefore, he is like a person who destroys evidence. And to me, it kind of hit the order hinges on that, which seems really weak.
I think without the investigation by the investigator, without that, it doesn't work. I think that makes it a little bit more significant that the investigation says that Thuin has a copy and he will wipe this. There's a high risk. This is the quote from him. This is a high risk that he might wipe his computers, destroying evidence if he had advance warning.
But he's just saying, I think Thuin has the unauthorized copy, but in my experience, people who have unauthorized copy wipe things. The judge has to go down and add the hacker thing in to put some justification in. I don't know. A couple of different ways of reading it, of course. But it probably will get wiped out on appeal, would be my guess. But they've already seized the computers and they've imaged the drives. So some harm already done. Let's cheer things up and talk about Tesla Model S adding support for Chrome.
Yeah, so Elon Musk was at a reception in Munich and answered a bunch of questions from a variety of press and developers there, and said some interesting stuff. For example, that he hopes to open the onboard system in the Model S, which is the very popular Tesla sedan, to third-party apps by the end of 2014, so kind of around this time next year. But not just that, also that the Model S will get Google Chrome for its big kind of center tablet screen, which is, if you've been in one, it's really, really huge. The current browser that it has is some proprietary thing that's kind of terrible, at least in my experience. And Musk also said that Tesla is considering an Android emulator that would take advantage of the car's Linux platform. So something that acted a lot more like Android, but would still run Linux, which it does currently. So sounds like, you know, spruce it up, give people something like Chrome that they want and that runs well, and then make it seem a lot more like the most popular mobile OS in the world. So I think a lot of people say, well, you know, if you've got a lot of third-party apps that people can run, we've got safety issues. You can't drive and run your apps. Let's just say, let's put that aside for a second, because yes, anything that you're doing that takes your eyes off of the road is not a good thing.
Safety, right, they shouldn't have the screen there at all if that's the big problem. Exactly.
Exactly. Road safety aside, let's say you're always, I don't know, parked in a parking space when you're using these apps. What apps are really ideal in a car like this? That screen is huge. Dana, do you have any insight?
Let's see. If I owned a Tesla, and let's just say for now that we have a car like this that has only one main screen in the front, let's, I guess, eliminate the possibility for now that Tesla is going to make cars that also have, let's say, screens in the back seat for passengers to enjoy. It would be nice to maybe get email alerts, be able to glance at my email really quickly. It would be really nice to have Google's own Maps application built in. I don't know if I specifically would want to make use of Google Offers. I think it's a little gimmicky, but who knows? There might be people who want localized offers. And who knows, reviews also on local points of interest, local businesses. All of that could be interesting and not potentially too distracting to me while I'm driving. Notice I didn't even say YouTube. I don't necessarily want YouTube while I'm driving. Although, who knows, the person sitting next to me might get bored on a long trip and want it.
I love the idea of Android in a car like that. If you have, assuming you could have multiple applications up at once, that would be the one thing I'd be curious about, because if you have this large 17-inch display and you just watch, you're looking at a tablet app that's just gigantic, that's going to eat up the whole space. But using things like all kinds of radio stations, right, using Pandora or using Play Music, you have those functions with Maps, all of those things that work really well with the touchscreen. If that goes into a Tesla car, that's really intriguing. Although I'm really curious about how often it gets updated. Will that have to be an issue? Do you have to root your car if you want to do more fun things?
Yeah, people will be jailbreaking their cars all over the place. I think this is a way to tell developers, hey, we're trying to make it easy for you to make stuff, make HTML5 apps, and maybe we'll even have an Android emulator so you can put your Android apps on there, because they want folks to see the car as a platform. I want this. I want stuff added to the car, you know, in general, that makes sense and that make my life easier, so I can just talk to the car and say, hey, where's the nearest restaurant, gas station, etc. My mind immediately goes to, do I want Google to have even more data about me? It's already to the scary point how much they collect. Now they're going to be following me around in my car too. Not that they don't already with my phone.
Yeah, I think it really is. It kind of just turns into, well, if we all have our phones in the car already, it's not as if we don't have access to any of the potential apps that could run on the car's system itself. But at what point does it become better to have it in the car system? I mean, this is, I'm almost talking more general than really Tesla. It's just that Tesla's in a great position to be able to test a lot of this stuff out, because its onboard system is completely, the whole thing is digital. I mean, they don't have one analog anything on that entire dash, and they've got that huge tablet. It's, I don't know, it's kind of cool to see what apps will come to that platform.
Wonder if people will complain that their older Teslas haven't upgraded to the new version of Android yet at some point in the future. We still got more car news actually today to talk about. This one is an interesting program called Automatic Link.
So Automatic Link is now available at Apple retail stores and online stores. Now, this device was available at Automatic's website and online only at the time. Originally, it was going to come out in May, got delayed to August, and it's now finally available. If you're not aware of it, it's a $100 device. It attaches to your car's OBD2 sensor, or port, that is. It's right around your steering column if you look under there. Cars built after 1996, they have this port. And what it does is it connects with your iPhone via Bluetooth. And the two work together via an app that'll basically quantifies your driving habits. It records every mile you drive, generates maps for you. It does rough calculations of your fuel economy and expenses based on nationwide gas prices and your actual car, the make and model. If your check engine light comes on, you'll actually get a text message. You'll see what's actually wrong with your car. But one of the bigger deals about this situation with Automatik is that these devices are going to be in Apple retail stores. If you've ever been in an Apple store, you know they don't sell a heck of a lot of third-party things. Dana, do you think this device or devices like this will catch on with the mainstream if it's in a place like an Apple store?
That certainly improves its chances, but to me it seems like it's trying to cash in on, I guess, what I would call the quantified self movement. We already have lots of gadgets, let's say like Fitbit or the Jawbone Up, that collect this wealth of data for us, for anyone who's sort of a numbers geek or a data geek. Some people really like having that data about themselves. The difference here is that I think, whereas with something like a Fitbit device or the Jawbone Up, I think people really are personally and deeply interested in, let's say, losing weight or becoming more active. And so that information is useful to them. I'm a little biased here because I'm not much of a driver here in New York City, but I have to wonder how many people are that deeply interested in becoming better drivers, especially seasoned drivers. I think they probably are fairly confident and know they can operate a car very well. I do have to wonder how many people care that much about becoming better drivers, especially if the cost of the hardware is, you know, $100.
Yeah, I was looking at this, and I don't drive an awful lot. I have a whole 1 mile commute, and sometimes though I would like to get some quantified data about this because my car's pretty old. It's a 2004 Honda Pilot. It's not like it has all these bells and whistles where it's, you know, tracking my mileage. That's another thing. As your car gets older, obviously it's not as efficient. There could be problems there. To save yourself trips to the dealer or the mechanic to say, hey, what's wrong with my car? I think that might be worth it right there, the $100 device. On top of that, by the way, Android support is coming in December with a limited selection of phones. But I think the Apple placement might be pretty interesting because if you're in this Apple world, you go to the store and you're like, hey, look, there's that Nest Protect and there's a Nest and there's this thing for my car. It just seems like you have all of these devices and they're speaking to a device you already know, and it's your phone.
That's the crux of the story to me. I mean, there are similar devices already on the market that do stuff like this. And car nerds are well into this stuff. They've been playing with their OBD2 ports for years now. This going into the Apple store and having a nice round number price that people can say, oh, and it works with my iPhone, is an attempt to mainstream it. And that's where I think Dana's question is of particular note. How mainstream does this appeal? I think people, the idea of gas mileage, I think that appeals. Whether this thing is actually working, if they're doing national averages, I mean, the gas prices in California are much higher than they are in other parts of the United States. That's not going to help me much doing a national average. I want to know which gas station is going to give me the lowest price and what routes are going to reduce my gas mileage. If it can do stuff like that, then yeah, maybe it might have more appeal.
Yeah, I think the CEO of Automatik was explaining that as Automatik has more users, they'd be able to generate more and more data so they can actually find out more information to give to users, but they haven't fully explained their plans yet.
I want to know what I would get via text message if my engine light comes on that I wouldn't get from my engine light coming on. Well, I mean, usually when an engine light comes on, you're like, okay, well, I need to take it in. I don't know. I think maybe I don't know enough about cars. So if the engine light comes on, I'm like, okay, I'm going to take it in and have somebody else fix it. And I don't even really care what it was. But it is kind of interesting to sort of drill down into, well, what specifically is happening here? It is convenient, obviously, to have all of that stuff on your phone, to not have to be, I don't know, sitting in the driver's seat and pushing buttons in order to get a little bit of information. I mean, yeah, I'm not sure how much gas prices. It really depends on where you live. That information could be a lot more helpful, or I don't know if you're on some sort of a road trip. But in general, it's pretty cool. Yeah, it's the quantified self for your car.
Yeah, quantified car. All right, let's go on to the randomizer. Straw poll today, and 38% is pretty close. A new $100 bill with word art on it almost got to the top, but instead, 4K 12-inch tablets are going to be a thing. And Japan Display can prove it. It's a 12.1-inch TFT module. It's just the display part with 4K resolution. Is this going to be coming to a tablet near us in the next 2 years?
It's Retina. It's going to be 12.
It's
this is the iPad Pro. Here we go. Why would you want a 12-inch tablet? But if you did,
You want it to be right up next to your face.
And that's how you can actually see 4K. That's the thing. A lot of problems with 4K is that you're too far to even notice the detail. A tablet you can put right here. I love it. It's crazy. I want one.
You do? What do you want it for? Just because?
I like high resolution everything. Like real life is really high res. So I like that too.
Not for me anymore. Just, you know, as you get older, resolution goes down.
That's true too.
Yeah.
You just like the concept of it because you won't be able to tell the difference. You just want to say, if I had bionic eyes, this would look awesome.
This is what it would look like. Exactly.
I'm figuring this is going to be also crazy expensive, and I'm a cheap man, so that's not going to happen, but it's a nice idea.
Well, that's farther in the future. Let's look closer in the future at the calendar.
Tomorrow, we've got some earnings. Microsoft, Zynga, and Amazon all reporting their earnings tomorrow, October 24th. Plus, we've got a Google Play event tomorrow as well, but it's not really expected to be a hardware event. So, cool, not cool?
Keep our eyes peeled.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Check some emails.
Incoming message.
Okay, we got a message from Frank in Pittsburgh. Some thoughts on BBM. Couldn't it be assumed that BBM still offers end-to-end encryption? Also, I have both WhatsApp and BBM with Android. I use Google Voice, and it was a pain in the behind to get WhatsApp to use my GV number. With BBM, I've given them my email address, and now I have an IM service that I do not have to utilize my phone number with. While this is a small market, it might be big enough to keep BBM relevant if BlackBerry does things correctly. That's a big statement there. If BlackBerry does things correctly.
Well, yeah, there's that. I thought that was an interesting little hack. Oh, sorry, not a hack. A workaround, because I don't want Frank to get hauled into court. I thought that was cool. Nice little thing in there. Thanks for writing in, Frank. And thank you, Dana Woolman, for joining us. And Gadget.com, anything in particular going on there you'd like to let folks know about?
Oh, gosh. I think that we are finally closing in on the end of a very busy week. We've driven ourselves crazy with Surface, Apple, and Nokia coverage. And those earnings, we still have the earnings. But I think we are maybe closing in at the end of a very busy week. Hopefully you guys are too.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. I think we could all use a bit of a rest after this week of news.
For sure. For sure. Well, if you'd like to catch up on some of that news in depth, see some hands-on videos and stuff, check out Engadget.com. Thank you, Dana.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, as always. Also, don't forget, you can help influence our coverage. If you're like, hey, I'd like to hear you guys talk about this story, go to our subreddit, technewstoday.reddit.com, and cast your vote. You can vote up. You can also vote down. If you're like, I think that story is silly, you can vote it on down. That helps us know, what do people really think of all these stories out there? Technewstoday.reddit.com. Don't forget to email us, TNT@twit.tv. If you have any thoughts, we read them out on the show. You can call us, leave us a voicemail too, 260-TNT-SHOW. In fact, keep it under 30 seconds and have an insightful point. You might hear yourself on the show. Subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/technewstoday. Find us on the web where you can subscribe to our podcast at twit.tv/TNT. And of course, we will be back tomorrow. Martin Giles from The Economist will join us, so you should too. We'll see you then.